O'clock. So welcome everybody. I hope everybody enjoyed the keynote. It's really good to see Gurdeep back and passionate about Link and Skype again. And I was just sort of mentioning before, about 5 minutes ago, about this concept of universal communications. I think it's a real sort of leap forward that encompasses all the cloud stuff now and Skype, and sort of transcends the boundary between consumer and enterprise a little bit. So it's going to be interesting to see the direction that story goes over the coming months. So, without further ado, welcome to Voice 201, enhancing your voice rollout to make it a killer success for the business. My name is Justin Morris. I am a senior consultant from Modality Systems, where I specialize in the architecture and deployment of large-scale Link Server 2013 rollouts, specifically around voice. And I'm also a Link MVP. So, who am I? I've got 8 years of experience in UC, in Australia and the UK. I've been in the UK last 4.5 years at Modality that whole time, just getting really stuck into a lot of Link deployments, both on the technology side, but also on the user adoption side, and doing requirements gathering and understanding use cases for Link within enterprise. Within 2012 and 2013, I deployed the largest Link voice deployment in the UK. Which is a 16,000 user PBX replacement project. And so that engagement really enabled me to learn a lot more about the scope, this really what the scope of this presentation is, and that's understanding all the other bits and pieces around the voice deployment that you need to make that entire rollout a success for the business outside of just what Link provides natively. I'm also the co-founder of the Microsoft UC User Group in London, with two other MVPs there. I've been running that user group for about 2 years. I've got a blog at justin-morris.net where I blog about UC industry news and little tidbits I find out on customer sites when I find things and they break, and then I try and fix it and then post up some good screenshots and things like that to help you guys out along the way. I'm also a contributor on the UC Architects podcast. Who made it along to the UC Architects party last night at Vidara? A couple? One, two? Good. Yeah, I think it was good fun. So thanks for coming along with that. And the podcast is really cool because we get Exchange guys and Link guys pretty much in a Link meeting once every 2 weeks, and we discuss news and updates from the community and what the impact is on the industry and our view of those, and technical content as well. And we've been really having a lot of success with that. There's a big bit of listenership. So definitely check it out online. You can get it on iTunes and Zune Store and all those kind of things. And then lastly, I'm on Twitter with Justin Morris without the N, so JustinMorris. Feel free to tweet me with any questions or tell me if this presentation was really good or really bad or anything like that. I'll take your criticism. And if you've got any questions along the way, just leave it through to the end. We've got a microphone in the center of the room there, so you can jump up and throw me a curveball if you want. So effectively, what we're looking to do is complete the UC picture, because Link 2013 provides the core UC solution of a voice platform and providing dial tone and all the voice functionality that people need to for their day job. But there are things outside of Link that we need to meet as part of sort of enterprise due diligence, effectively. So if you're part of a tender process to do a voice replacement or deploy a UC solution, or as a customer working out what your requirements are, Link is going to be the core of that platform. They need to think about what other products do I need to augment that to provide things like contact center or operator consoles or warehouse phones for guys out on the floor that are shipping things around the world and stuff like that. And then you also need to think about a period of coexistence between your legacy PBXs, any legacy devices you've got out there, what type of hardware and kit do I need in between those to make sure I've got a seamless transition and that I don't have any bumps along the way and I don't get into a situation where I've enabled 150 users for Link Enterprise Voice Pilot, but they can't call into my Mitel contact center or something like that. So we need to ensure that we've got full like-for-like functionality between the two solutions. And then how do you address the remaining communications requirements? So a lot of the time at Modality, we walk in and we say, yep, we can fully scope up a Link 2013 solution for you. Voice isn't a problem. We do that day in, day out. But then a customer might say, well, I've got a contact center with 1,000 agents, you know, spread across the country. So we need to map out what the queues look like and the groups and the call flows and things like that to address all the remaining requirements for the communication solution. And the last thing around computing, completing the UC picture is value adds and complementary products. So things like, what else could you bundle into this solution that's going to allow you to measure adoption better or get better analytics around the quality of the experience from the solution? Because it's all well and good that you spend a lot of money deploying Link and you give that out to the business, but if you can't see that people have been using that and they've been generating conference minutes and you're getting return on investment, then you can't go back to the business and say, this has been successful and, you know, we've delivered on all the promises that we said to get the funding for this project. And so more around this is what we're looking to do is complete the last mile of a voice rollout so that, you know, we get up to sort of 90% with Link and then we want to complete the last 10% with devices and gateways and operator console products, things like that. And we need to do things like meet legal, regulatory, security, and company policy requirements. Depending on the industry, there may be a lot of sensitivity around data, specifically banking and financial industries, where you need to set up things like ethical walls and say that if I've got a part of my business that is operating that has sensitive data around trading and securities, then I don't want other parts of the business to potentially speak with people that are in that part of the business because there could be a conflict of interest there. And then, like I said, measuring the adoption of the UC solution so they can go forward and say, you know, we spent money deploying edge servers so that we could facilitate federation and remote working. So I want to be able to go through and generate reports that say, hey, people have been now working from home more often. I can see that they're running conferences, they're collaborating, and we're getting a lot of value out of the solution. So to really put this in a one-word sentence, the objective that I'd like you to get from this session is to understand the supporting products and services that are available to enhance your voice rollout. So I've scoped this kind of at a top-level, high-level, that I'm going to cover the full sort of ecosystem of products, a lot of what the partners are offering out on the expo for, and then there's going to be sessions throughout the next 3 days that dive more into individual parts of these third-party solutions, and I'll mention the session codes at the end of the session. So you can write those down and check those out as well. So here's what I'm going to cover in terms of agenda. The first thing I'll do is really address all the additional telephony use cases. So things like attendant consoles for your receptionists or people that work on switchboards, contact centers, call recording, these type of solutions. And then I'll talk about the different pieces of voice infrastructure you can leverage to fill in a bit of the holes in the back end. So sometimes you might deploy Link and just piggyback that off the back of the PBX and leave it as is. So it's good to understand what sort of flexibility is there to uplift Link into a more prominent position going forward. And I'm going to look at compliance solutions, so fulfilling all those requirements that I mentioned in the slide before. Talk about user adoption and what can be done to get some more intelligence out of that. And then app integration and development, where I feel is, you know, there's quite a lot of power in the platform, and that was talked about during the keynote as well. And then I'll wrap everything up with a couple of key takeaways for you guys to take away from the session. So first thing I want to talk about is, what are the industries that we see out in the community that typically ask us, hey, we have these additional requirements that Link out of the box can't provide. What other solutions and software do we need to look at to meet those? And the first one and biggest is always financial services. This comes up a lot where you'll see that they need to, you know, retain data and do a lot of quite specific things around financial services. So, and there's always a lot of governance in financial services as well. So this is always a sort of big one in terms of meeting compliance requirements. The next one there is professional services, and this is where a lot of the ethical wall stuff comes in, where you may have a professional services firm that is doing an audit engagement for a particular customer, but then another part of their business is also providing guidance and advice to that customer. So you don't want the two of those to be able to interact with each other. You want to keep that separate. And they have a lot of concerns around data sovereignty and data protection, and making sure that, you know, if a user uses Link, that their account doesn't run off on a device they log into, that they're using a corporate endpoint. Then there's customer service departments, and this is typically around the contact center requirement, where we need to ensure that the way that the contact center works in the traditional sense and the legacy PBX can be carried forward into the Link environment, and then hopefully enhanced and their lives made a bit easier as well. And then also, in terms of customer service departments, call recording comes into this as well, where, you know, whenever you call into a help desk, you state, you get the message that, you know, your call is important to us, we maybe record it for training purposes. So being able to record that back and having that easily discoverable is an important part. And then training teams as well. The amount of times that we go into a customer and say, you can use Link to deliver training content to your users, and that's things like HR training, compliance training, anti-bribery training, all these kind of things, and people say, oh, that's incredible, because a lot of the times training teams are quite frustrated because they just send out an email and say, you know, you're due to watch your IT security training, and then it never gets addressed. But we can use some of the dev functionality in Link to watch for presence and then nag people to ensure that they can watch that training. And then finally, we see a lot of value in providing user adoption and utilization stats to IT planners. So people who are enterprise architects in organizations whose job it is to formulate a roadmap of technology, being able to say, okay, we have Link today, and we can see that it's got a conferencing utilization of however many tens of thousands of minutes per month, and we're using this amount in terms of IAM, and here's our network capacity, that kind of thing. Being able to provide those stats back to IT planners allows them to then architect for the future. Cool. So I'm going to dive straight into addressing additional telephony use cases. And the first one of those is contact centers. So contact centers and Link, this is a continually evolving and improving story. There's probably about 7 or so vendors now on the market that are providing contact center solutions for Link. I remember back when I was looking at OCS 2007, I think the only vendor that had a contact center story for Link was Aspect. You know, so it was very, there was not much of a solution there. So there was immaturity. And in terms of having conversations around being a valid voice platform at that stage was a tough conversation to have. But now there's so much more in the market. There's a lot more collateral. There's case studies out there. You know, so there's actual customers using Link in a contact center in anger. So there's a lot more maturity, and you can back up your story a lot more. And this is core to completing the UC vision, because I think it's all well and good to say, yep, we're going to move to Link 2013 for our voice deployment. But a lot of the time is the customer might have the contact center still sitting on the old Mitel platform or Avaya, and they'll go, we're just going to leave that as a little island for a while, and we're not too sure what we're going to do with it. So being able to say to the business or to your customer, okay, no, we can bring across that contact center, and the software they're using today may be compatible with Link, so they can port that straight across. Or you can propose a replacement solution and work with them to bring across the workflows and get users used to using the new contact center with Link. And in terms of a contact center and Link, it can be an independent project in its own right, which comes back to the second one I was talking about there, where if you're engaging in a, you know, multiple tens of thousands of user voice deployment, and really the goal there is to get Link onto the desktop, get phones deployed, get dial tone lit up, and just get all the Link functionality rolled out as part of a project, getting the contact center piece done as part of that project can be quite overwhelming in terms of a program of work. You know, you're potentially looking at many, many months. So it may be better to look at this as an independent project in its own right and say, look, we're going to move over our entire workforce, who are the information workers, over to Link for voice, and then we'll approach the contact center as a second project after that, so we can not get mixed up in scheduling and, you know, getting oversubscribed in terms of delivery. So the first thing that you should do is really determine your requirements around contact center. So ask the business or the customer questions like, how many agents do they need to support? Where are they located? What are their needs? What kind of queues are required? So is it very simple type, questions that come into an IVR, or is it like a lot of nested things that happen there? Do you need to capture customer information like account numbers or things that are then presented through to the agent as well? Reporting and analytics. What sort of intelligence do you need to get out of the contact center solution, especially service desk managers whose role it is to directly manage agents? They need to be able to see things like longest waiting time and what the state of agents is, you know, if they're ready, not ready, how long they've been on a break, what the reason for that break was, and then be able to report on things like that. Literally, I think service desk managers are people that are never not hungry for more data. They're literally, the more that you can give them around how their guys are working and how their call flow is working, they just want to optimize it like anything else. So if you can say, I can give you down to, you know, like milliseconds of calls and like abandoned call rates and things like that, they'll love you and they'll fly the flag for you, no worries. Another thing here is ask yourself, could the response group within Link fulfill the requirement, and could you avoid a lot of the pain of going through the due diligence of looking at this contact center piece? And one thing that always stuck in my mind is that I think for Barack Obama's re-election campaign, they actually used Link response groups for all the campaign donation hotlines. So that's something to think about. I think if Link can stand up to the test of RGS just for that sort of thing, it's worth having a look at. And there's some third-party solutions out there from guys out on the expo floor that will give you wall boards for response groups and deeper reporting and things. So you get all the good call routing stuff from Link's native response groups and then just complement that with the reporting piece on top. And then after you've looked at all the sort of user-focused requirements, you should look at what the integration method looks like in the back end. So there's two methods here. The first one would be we set up a SIP trunk from your session border controller into the contact center servers. And the benefit of this is that it's a pure voice path. So the call is coming in from the PSTN ingress, and it hits the contact center solution, and then that call gets routed accordingly depending on what the queue destination is. The second integration method here is a UCMA application integrated with Link. So the contact center solution vendor would have developed, integrated their contact center solution using UCMA. So you get deeper integration there and you get things like presence integration across the two platforms. But the one limitation with this is that conferences are created on the Link pool for every single call that comes through. So it adds an overhead on your Link front end servers. It's okay. So there's two approaches here, and yeah, each of them have their benefits and disadvantages as well. Yep. You can do that as well. Yeah, so sub out the session border controller, yeah, from the mediation service. Yep, absolutely. And then the next thing here around contact centers is the user experience. So I can't stress this enough that you need to survey your key stakeholders on their required features and understanding exactly how they use that contact center solution so you can bring that across to Link. Because in some of the engagements I've been in, I've had contact center guys come to me and they've just used Link in the first instance and they get a bit furious and angry about it and say, you know, this isn't going to be good enough for me to be able to run my contact center on. So you need to sit down as part of your engagement with the business and ask some questions and say, how do your users use this? What type of requirements do they have? Then also do things like, don't just do like for like. As part of moving to a UC platform, there's an opportunity to rethink the way you do things in the business. How can you build more intelligence around traditional workflows? So leveraging presence and escalation techniques and things like that. So there's an opportunity here to not just do a quick port across, you know, make it provide even more value to the business. You should look at whether the contact center solution is an integrated client or it runs standalone, side by side with Link 2013. So some of the vendors will have a contact center app where it's got the contact center piece where you can see the queues you're logged into and calls that are active in those queues. And then the Link 2013 client runs effectively right next to that, and it's one app on the desktop. Then there's others where they're completely separate, and calls will come into either one depending on what the destination was. So have a look at those and survey the vendors out there and look at what works best for you. But then another thing I can't stress more enough is that the training is key. With a product like Link and something that's so critical as people's phones, you can't just give them any type of application and say, go off and have fun. It was said in the keynote that one of the companies there were able to roll out Link and not provide any training. I can't say that's been my experience in the field very much. I would say that sort of people in the sort of millennial type time frame, like Gen Y people, might just adopt to Link quite easily and complementary products, but then there's more people out in the workforce that require a bit more hand-holding, and you need to really help them along the way. Okay. So some considerations around contact center. First one is, can the contact center client app run over your Edge server, or does it need to connect to VPN? This can definitely be a deal breaker, in my opinion, because you deploy Link, you communicate the benefits of remote working, VPN-less connectivity, this kind of thing. If you then have to roll out a contact center solution and you say to the agents, oh, you can go and work from home now, but you need to connect over direct access, or you need to connect over your Cisco VPN client, it just dirties the story a little bit. So have a bit of a look at that. And my favorite would be to looking at the contact center solution that can leverage Edge in some way. Have a look at vendor support. Are you going to buy a product and then this vendor is going to run away on you and then say, oh, no, it's not our problem, or our code's bad, like we have to deliver patches every 2 weeks because, you know, we're not up to scratch. So have a look at the pedigree of that vendor, what their support's like, how they interact with you as a customer, because it's going to be really important for if the proverbial hits the fan and you need to contact these guys, are they going to be there for you? Have a look at the high availability and disaster recovery model. What kind of uptime can the solution provide? Is it a active passive? Is it a hot standby? What kind of functionality can they provide across sites to be able to keep that contact center up and running? Because we've got a lot of great HA and DR built into the core Link platform, but we should be able to provide like-for-like HA and DR capabilities in the contact center piece as well. Okay, so that's a quick 5 to 10 minute run around contact centers and a bit of experience that I've had with them. So the next thing I want to talk about is operator consoles. And typically I see these where you need them for a high call volume user, somebody whose job it is to sit on reception and take calls for the business. And you know, they may be taking a call every 2 or 3 minutes. They've got calls queuing up as well, so they need to be able to handle those quickly. They need to do blind transfers, consultative transfers, see the availability of people. So this is where an operator console is traditionally required. And receptionists are one of the most important people in your organization. I can't stress this enough, is don't leave these guys out, because if you think about it, you've got a receptionist at front desk, you've got senior managers walking back and forth all the time, and if you go live on Link on a Monday morning, and the receptionist is having problems, and that manager walks up and says, how's Link going? We just got this today. And the receptionist says, oh, it doesn't work, I can't transfer properly, this and that. That's going to impact the perception of Link, like something shocking. And let me tell you now, it can be a real uphill battle to win back executive buy-in and perception on Link if it gets damaged. So receptionists are, what I would say, they're not key stakeholders in the traditional sense of key stakeholders, but they have a lot of influence around the business. So getting them involved early and literally like treating them like gold users is really important. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, the CEO's executive attendant, or assistant rather. Yeah, if they're not happy, then you're in trouble. Yeah. So get them involved early. Say, look, we're deploying Link. This is going to be our new unified communications platform. It's going to replace your phone. Here's how it works. Get them involved, because they're going to really appreciate that, that you haven't just deployed a technology and then just like left them with it. You know, you've asked for their feedback and their input early on. So some considerations around operator consoles. How many users will require an operator console? Do you just have a couple of receptionists on the front desk that are going to answer calls that is like the main number for the office? Or you perhaps have a centralized switchboard facility? I have one customer who has this where they have a switchboard center in London, and that center takes all the calls for 24 different regional office numbers for that organization. So they have a team of guys there, and they, you know, all have individual working methods, but it's different to a scenario where a receptionist might just be on the front desk of an office. And also have a look at, will you evaluate the Link 2010 attendant? Who's had a look at the Link 2010 attendant in the last couple of years? Yeah. So it still works, but it's not amazing. Things like patching, there's no patching for this client. It's obviously not, there's no 2013 version for it. The UI is not uniform in terms of the Link 2013 desktop client. But having said that, I've put the Link 2010 attendant console in front of some switchboard operators and receptionists, and they've said, "All right, this is fine. This worked for me." And you're like, "All right, sweet, good job." So, this, and the good thing about this is it's free, right? So you can put it out there. It doesn't require an additional server or something like some of the operator console solutions do. It just logs into Link, gets the job done. One of the downsides of this is that obviously it's just voice, right? So there's no video, there's no desktop sharing in that. And that's usually one of the deal breakers I see in my customers where they won't look at the Link 2010 attendant, is because you don't get all those modalities along with that. Have a look as whether this solution is going to be software or hardware-based. Will you just deploy it straight onto the PCs and they'll use a USB headset with that? Or we look at something like Polycom VVX with the sidecar attached, where they'll, you know, purely work off a hard phone and then just have the client running there and not really use the software and functionality. And when you are looking at these products, conduct a proof of concept of multiple different vendor products. So address vendor A, address vendor B, get feedback from the switchboard operators and receptionists and see how they like each of those and then make a decision. And look at things like case studies as well. Ask the vendor how many other customers are using this. You know, what's their success rate been like with their feedback? Go and really conduct some due diligence around this. Because it's just another thing that is such a critical voice requirement that you really need to dot all the I's, cross all the T's, and this kind of thing. Another consideration you should look at is directory integration. Because a lot of the workflow that these receptionists and switchboard operators are doing is that because they're like this, right? They're receiving calls so rapidly, is that someone might call up and be like, "Oh yeah, I'm looking for someone in sales." And you know, if that's a big company, they don't know everybody in sales, so they need to be able to search a database or a directory quickly to say sales or marketing or finance and get results really quickly and be able to route the call fast. So look at how the operator console solution integrates with Active Directory. Can it integrate with the CRM product, another database you may have that will allow the operator console to search by skills and other fields that you might require? So things like if I say I need someone in sales in Phoenix, so the operator console should be able to look that up and bring up information, be able to route that call for somebody who meets those search terms. And then lastly, evaluate the user experience. It's all well and good if you take a solution that might be cheap and less technical requirements, but if you put it in front of a user and they say, "This is rubbish, I can't use this every single day," you have to listen to those people. Link and UC in its core is all about user experience, which was reiterated in the keynote. So if my receptionist comes to me and says, "This is crap, but this one that's good, costs a lot of money, I would be able to justify to the business to say, you know, they want the one that costs more, but they're going to be more productive, they're going to be able to continue to keep working. Okay, so that's a bit about operator consoles. The next thing I want to talk about is facility devices. And I had to sort of coin this term off the bat, called facility devices, because it really encompasses a whole bunch of different products, all like requirements underneath this banner. So I'm going to talk about things like fax machines, which, who's had fun with fax machines and Link? One, two, three, four? So yeah, there's some smiles on your faces there. It's always fun, isn't it? Yeah. So here's, you know, hear me talk quite passionately about faxing in a second. Common area phones, door entry systems, paging systems, and warehouse phones. So these are all the things that, you know, the guys at Cisco, Mitel, Avaya, all those kind of things have these bespoke solutions, decked phones over the years. How can we ensure we can deliver that solution on top of Link as well? So my first and favorite one, your fax machine. First thing, do you even need a fax machine anymore? Audit this requirement. A lot of businesses, it's just, they have to have a fax machine. You know, there's no way around that. It's a legal requirement. Most businesses say that at the end of the day, fax will hold up in court. So you probably need to address that requirement. But try and make it easy on yourself, because the amount of times and late nights that I've spent trying to get old analog fax machines to talk through a voice gateway through to the PSTN and just dropping packets, and, you know, I'd try and send a page, and then I'd have somebody on the office on my mobile and say, did you get that fax page? And be like, oh, I got half of it and the rest is all garbled and things like this. So look at it and strike a bit of a balance between the challenge from a technical perspective to implement that and the business requirement. So have a look at things like analog ports in a gateway. This is a pretty quick, easy win, because you can just plug an old brother fax machine into an analog port in a gateway, provide it with dial tone, route the call out to the PSDN. It's a really simple solution that gets the job done. But also have a look at dedicated PSDN analog ports, where you would just have an old POTS line come in to the office or the data centers, and then that fax machine would be plugged directly into that, so it's completely independent from the UC solution and the gateways and SBCs and things. But my recommendation at the end of the day, I think, would be to either move to a hosted fax solution, where users could go online to a portal and then send and receive faxes that way, or go to a SIP-based fax server, which is going to use T38 or something like that. That's still a bit finicky to get working, but at least it's all IP, and you've got, you know, another service there that forms the whole UC solution that you can manage. Next one is common area phones. So the basic legacy analog phones that you see out there attached to your old Nortel PBXs and things like that can be repurposed in Link 2013. We can give them basic dial tone functionality. So that means you could save a bit of money by still just having some analog phones out within some of the offices, plugged into Link, being managed by Link, and still, you know, not have to replace with a whole bunch of phones. And to do this, you need to spec up your gateways with analog ports, specifically around branch offices, where if you say, I'm going to deploy a gateway with SBA into this office, and I know that I've got some analog phones in the lobby and in the lunchroom and things like that, so I know that I might need 8 or 16 analog ports within a gateway. And like I said, dial tone functionality only, really. So nothing really fancy we can provide to these analog phones, you know, based on the technical requirements to get them going. Next one is door entry and paging systems. And so this is for things where, you know, like if you've got, you don't have a receptionist or something, and you've got somebody comes into the office and they just hit a buzzer, and then in a legacy world, that buzzer would then make a call out to somebody or a group of people, and they'd answer the phone and then, you know, open the door with a magnetic lock or something like that. So being able to meet that requirement in Link, it's something that's, it's a bit of a, like, older way of doing things. So one thing to do is have a look at whether you actually need to provide a like-for-like feature set. Can you move to something a bit more intelligent? But this can be really hit and miss depending on the system. It depends, because some of them will say they support VoIP, they support SIP, but they don't. They won't interact with Link properly or with the SBC that you've got or Gateway. So there can be some challenges around this. There's more support coming. The SNOM PA1 can do this in some scenarios, but really validate before you commit to it, because you don't want to say, tell your IT manager or CIO, yep, I've got door entry and paging systems for Link, but you haven't looked into it, and there's some things it doesn't quite do properly. It doesn't support the requirements that you have. And like I said, consider deploying a new, more intelligent solution on this. You know, I've got one customer that had a requirement for a paging system because they needed to announce at 11:30 every morning that the lunch van had arrived. So things like this, like literally when you're at the forefront of providing innovative communication solutions for customers and they say, oh, you know, I've got factory workers who I need to page for this kind of thing. It's like, can we just take a second and have a look at that workflow and, you know, can we build something on top of Link, you know, a quick dev effort to say, you know, rather than doing that, let's send out an IM or an alert to users and have them acknowledge that, or some sort of, you know, more intelligent way of doing your stuff, because when we deploy UC, we just don't want to do like for like in a lot of the ways. We want to bring everything up into something that sits along the entire sort of scope of doing things. And then warehouse phones. This was one that I chucked in at the last minute because I thought this was quite an interesting topic, because it's something that usually gets left, and you know, after you've got Link and then the contact center stuff you look at, and then if it's a manufacturing or a kind of shipping company, the warehouse phone stuff might get left behind and you'll be trying to cobble together a solution at the last minute. So have a look at what the requirements are here. So how many warehouses are there and how large are they? How much square footage do you have to support? And you always need to conduct a site audit on this, so you need to see about things like how many repeaters do you need, access points, what are the density and the thickness of the walls or obstructions. So if you've got big pallet rigs across the whole warehouse, you know, are you going to use Wi-Fi or DECT for that? What's going to provide the penetration into the surrounding infrastructure within that environment? And then let's look at how many handsets. You know, if you've got a picking line or something in a warehouse, how many handsets do you need per operators within that? Have a look at things like that as well. Okay, next one is voice infrastructure. And Jamie Stark has a session on what I'm going to talk about here during the conference around deeper things around SBCs and SBAs and gateways. But I'm going to touch on this now because I think it's valuable to really understand all the different ways that you can enhance the voice infrastructure that Link is deploying, you know, the third-party solutions and other ways you can add value and consolidate. And the first one there is SIP trunking services. So if you typically have a lot of ISDN T1, E1 circuits deployed across the country or across the world, consolidating into a SIP trunking service is a good way to lower costs, lower call rates. So what this allows you to do is consolidate the connectivity into one or two data centers in the same country. There aren't a lot of carriers that will provide you inter-country SIP trunk capabilities. You know, if you've got DIDs and DDI ranges within one country, then you need to consolidate those into a central SIP trunk within that country, basically. From what I've seen, it's not possible to consolidate ranges from across countries into one SIP trunk provider. What this allows you to do is centralize the management of PSTN ingress and egress, so PSTN connectivity coming in and out of the environment. So rather than having individual ISDN circuits and services dotted throughout the country that have costs associated to them and management overheads, you can bring all that into one central place where you can monitor the call flow and removes a lot of the overhead. And like I said, lower call rate and ongoing service cost. Specifically around ISDN, they'll charge you monthly for that ISDN circuit, and then the call rates on top of that as well. So being able to do away from that and centralize on SIP trunks makes a lot of sense. In terms of the delivery methods for a SIP trunk, this really differs depending on the provider and what kind of connectivity you have to them. One of the most common ones is TLS or SRTP over the internet. So we have a secured SIP trunk for signaling and media over the internet, where between yourself and the SIP trunk provider, you'll encrypt that connection with certificates. And the next one is a MPLS or VPN connection to the provider. This is more common if, say, you have your WAN connection through a big vendor and they also do SIP trunking as well. You can say, well, hey, I've already got an MPLS tail into your cloud, so give me a SIP trunk over that as well into my data center. And then once you decide, hey, we're going to go with centralized SIP trunks, you need to look at how you're going to plan the migration, because this is always the thing that makes IT guys quiver in their boots, or telco guys within organizations get a bit scared when you say, oh, I'm going to move over 10,000 DIDs on 6 o'clock on a Friday night. Okay, you know, if this goes wrong, then we've broken all our PSDN connectivity for the whole business. So planning this and making sure that it's foolproof is absolutely imperative. Conduct comprehensive testing. Go through your full test matrix of all the different call scenarios you need to support PSDN ingress and egress. So calls from link to mobile, mobile to link to international, all these kind of things. If a legacy PBX still exists in the environment, you need to factor that in as well, because moving to a SIP trunk provider impacts the entire voice infrastructure within the business. During that project I did in 2012, 2013, of the 16,000 user link deployment, they also consolidated their 26 ISDN circuits in the UK into a single SIP trunk solution in two data centers. So that was a lot of work, where we had the old PBX in play there, we had to go through all the scenarios, we had call transfer, things we had to test. So you can't spend too much time on this one. Plan for a pilot using some tests, DIDs, DDIs. Every vendor that provides SIP trunking services will be able to give you a small range of numbers to test with, to be able to conduct that test plan that I mentioned just before. And then once everything's hunky-dory, you can schedule in that number porting that makes everybody so scared and unable to sleep at night. This can have its challenges depending on regions as well and the number of DIDs / DDIs you need to port, because in some regions you can just they'll just reassign the range to the SIP trunk provider and they can flick it over quite quickly. But when you start to get up to the tens of thousands of phone numbers, they actually have to change the ownership from whether it's, you know, cable and wireless BT in the UK or Verizon over here. They need to change the ownership to the SIP trunk provider, and that can take a couple of months to actually transfer that and go through all the paperwork. And that's important in terms of scheduling the project, because if you get halfway through a project and then you say, oh, I need to move 10,000 numbers, and you work out it's going to take 3 months to do that, that's going to blow your project timeline out like nothing else. And hand in hand with SIP trunk services, session border controllers provide us with a lot of value in terms of enhancing the voice infrastructure. So they provide us with a core voice routing platform that allows you to plug in multiple different things that talk SIP or H323 if you go that way into your link environment. So what I talked about, things like fax servers, having an SBC in play there allows you to do things like having the fax server talk directly to the SBC and having analog phones talk to the SBC and the SIP trunk coming into there. So you've got this core voice routing platform that's doing everything for you. And it really forms the glue of a complex interop scenario. So say I've got link deployed here, I've got a Mitel PBX, I might have an Avaya PBX, and each of those talk SIP, and they talk different flavors of SIP. And SBC can sit in the middle of those and mediate between all the different interop requirements. That's exactly what I just said. So there's two SBC deployment models that we see out in the industry. And the first one is an upstream deployment, where the SBC is deployed in front of all the voice infrastructure and terminates a SIP trunk from the ITSP. And then that SBC will route calls to link in the legacy PBX. And we typically see this type of scenario integrated with Active Directory, where we can make a call routing decision based on whether the user is enabled for Link Enterprise Voice or not. It's a pretty common way of doing it these days, and it provides you with a lot of flexibility for migration. So you can migrate 1,000 users across, and the SBC knows they've been migrated because it's querying AD, and it just automatically starts routing its calls across to Link instead of the legacy PBX. And the second deployment model is a downstream model, where the SBC is deployed behind the legacy PBX and only routes calls to and from Link. So say I've got Cisco Call Manager, have an SBC in between that and Link, and it's basically just passing the calls between. And you'd see this primarily in a pilot or proof of concept scenario where maybe the organization isn't 100% on Link just yet, so they have an SBC behind there to mediate the connectivity. And then what we commonly see is a flip take place where it will go from downstream to upstream, and you'll flip around all the call routing, so the SBC then becomes that core voice routing platform in an upstream deployment. Once the organization has said, yep, Link is where we want to go, we're going to throw out your old PBX, it's gathering dust, let's get the SBCs up into upstream. And the next is ISDN gateways. If you haven't consolidated on SIP yet, ISDN gateways are where it's at. So you can terminate your existing E1s or T1 PRIs, or provide a PRI connection to the legacy PBX. If you've got old Northel Meridians or anything that the word SIP never occurred to this PBX, if they're only talking E1, T1 PRIs, then having an ISDN gateway in between those is how you're going to provide PSDN connectivity to Link. And these can be provided, can be combined with an SBC to provide ISDN and SIP interoperability. So this is where those platforms provide even more value, where you can say, okay, I've got a platform of four devices that are ISDN gateways and SBCs, and then I want to take in all the existing T1s I have today into those gateways and provide like-for-like service, but then maybe as part of a second phase of the project, I want to bring in some SIP trunks and then port over their DIDs. So these devices can provide a middle ground throughout that entire project life cycle. And there's two deployment models once again. The upstream deployment model where that ISDN gateway is terminating the PSDN connectivity, and the downstream deployment model where it's sitting behind the legacy PBX in a POC or pilot environment. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about is compliance solutions. And this is how we're going to meet regulatory requirements for Link 2013. To control things like how IM is used, voice, video, federation between different users within the organization and between yourselves and federated domains as well. So when you need to get as granular as saying users within my audit department can federate with company A with IAM, but they can't share desktops, things like that. It's where you need to get quite granular. Things like legal disclaimers, where Link out of the box can provide you with an archiving disclaimer, but it can't, you can't modify that text. So if I send an IAM to somebody over federation, I can't input a disclaimer that says your content is going outside the organization now. We're not liable for what may take place, that kind of thing. Also, keyword detection and filtering. So if you need to detect on things like social security numbers, credit card numbers, profanity filtering as well, this is where a compliance solution will meet those requirements for you. And you can do things like, I want to filter it out and block it, or filter it out and alert somebody. So there's a lot of flexibility there. Ethical walls, like I talked about before. So ensuring that different parts of the business can't speak to each other based on the requirements of business engagements. And also security requirements. So doing things like controlling external access to Link and Exchange. This has been a bit of a bugbear of a lot of financial services and professional services organizations in the last 12 to 18 months, specifically where they're using MDM solutions like Good for Mail on iPhone, or something that's sandboxing that connectivity. Link 2013 for mobile doesn't have anything for that requirement today. So things like opening up access to Exchange through a reverse proxy just for Link, for the Link mobile client, is worth having a look at, so that you can still provide all the good functionality for mobile clients for Link, but you can still keep it quite secure. And then avoiding distributed denial of service attacks and account lockouts. So there's security filters you can put on the Link Edge and on TMG reverse proxies to ensure that AD accounts don't get locked out, the internal infrastructure isn't susceptible to DDoS attacks. These are all good conversations to have with security guys. Next one around compliance is data loss prevention and e-discovery. And this will ensure that sensitive data doesn't leave the organization. So that, you know, if they say that if a user can't communicate outside of the organization based on the type of content and things like that. So similar to before, detect and filter on keyword strings, credit card numbers, social security numbers, so that if, say, I'm a user here and I try and send an IM to a Skype user with a credit card number in that, I've got something in the infrastructure that can block that credit card number from leaving the organization. And then with this, we can make discovery of Link archive data easier and faster. Because Link can archive data for us out of the box into the SQL database, but it's not very easy to get to. It's easier in 2013 with archiving into Exchange 2013, but there's third-party products out there that will make it easier for non-technical people to go out and discover that archived content. Next one is around voicemail compliance. So figure out, like, what's the business justification for this. One customer I had that had this where they had their legacy PBX voicemail platform, because that was just a voice file sitting in the PBX, it couldn't get to that voice file or do anything with it. But once you move to Exchange UM, that voice file is just an attachment to a message in a Exchange mailbox. So people could detach it, forward it onto somebody outside the organization. So how do you guard against that if that's required? Luckily, there's stuff out of the box with Exchange Information Rights Management and ADRMS to support this. So in Outlook 2010, when you can classify voicemails and say the voicemail can't be detached from the message, it can't be forwarded, things like that will meet these requirements. But if that's not available to you, you can look at transport rules in Exchange to do it in a bit of a more simple manner. They are, yeah. So the, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Exchange IRM and ADRMS are Microsoft products that they come as part of Windows Server and Exchange. So, yeah, Exchange IRM and, yep, that's a Microsoft thing, yep. They are, yes, yep. Okay, call recording. This is another big one that we come up against within regulated industries, where they say that all calls that come in from the PSTN have to be recorded and they have to store those for 7 years or something like that. But this can blow up outside of that as well, where an organization may have requirements to record all calls from a user, all calls from all users as well. And like I said at the start of the session, this is beneficial for training purposes as well, where contact center guys can record calls and they can listen back to those and assess the satisfaction of people and then improve and things like that. And so there's 8 vendors qualified by Microsoft today. And you should have a look at their different integration methods, and I'll touch on those within this section here. So things like, is this going to be all users or just a subset? Are your contact center agents? Do you need to recall all conversations or just calls coming in from the PSTN? Is it just voice you need to record, or do you need to look at recording video and desktop sharing as well? And there's solutions on the market that can do that. And is this going to be constant recording or just on-demand recording? And there's different ways of doing this as well. So depending on the users that are having their calls recorded, you might just constantly record that off to a store, or you may deploy a client-side app that allows you to turn the recording on and off, you know, based on, say, you've got a workflow where a contact center agent is taking payment information. They might want to turn off the call recording so it doesn't record the credit card number, and then turn the call recording back on. And the call recording vendors are building more intelligence into that now, where they can actually detect the speech. So when a credit card number or a social security number starts being spoken, they can automatically turn off the call recording. So it's pretty cool. So there's four ways of recording link calls. The first one is a UCMA conference. And what happens with this is that each call is escalated to a conference to record. And then you've got the trunk side, where this will capture PSTN calls for recording only. So your call recording mechanism will sit at the gateway or the SBC, and it will capture all the calls there. Next is a port span, so a port mirroring off a switch. It's basically just dumping all the voice traffic out somewhere, so the SRTP data, and then decrypting that later on. So that's a bit more of a simpler solution. And then the last one is a media proxy, either on the edge server or a dedicated server. And what this does is it uses a server-side plugin on your Link front-end server to redirect all the calls for recording. So what this does is it will intercept the ICE candidate negotiation between two Link endpoints and say, rather than Link user A and Link user B sending peer-to-peer audio, the server-side plugin will intercept the candidates for ICE and say, both of you terminate on the call recording server for media, and that call recording server is able to record the call content. So it does impact on your call flows and architecture a little bit, but if there's a requirement for call recording, this is probably one of the best solutions to go with, because it ensures you can capture all different call scenarios, even out on edge, out on PSTN, everywhere. So some considerations for call recording. Look at things like, how is a solution licensed? Is it per seat? Is it per server? How does the solution handle failover? So is it active, passive? Is there site failover involved? Scaling the solution. If you need to put out these media proxies and things to branch sites so you can record calls there, how scalable is that, and what does the architecture look like? How the recorded calls discovered. So it's all well and good to dump out all the recorded calls somewhere, but somebody needs to be able to go into a nice portal to be able to play them back and categorize them and actually have something useful. And then lastly, what's the impact on the network? You know, if I'm forking off all my calls back into a server somewhere to record them, what's the bandwidth impact going to be on that? So have a bit of think about that. Okay, next session I want to talk about is usage and adoption. And this is important because it's all well and good we say, okay, Mr. CIO, it's going to cost me $750,000 to deploy Link. And you go ahead and do that, and you know, you've sold them on the business benefits and the ROI and increased productivity and all this kind of thing. If you can't then feed that back into the business afterwards and say, yes, this has been beneficial, gotten feedback from users and things like that, you're not going to be able to seal the deal, and that's going to reduce confidence in, you know, your role as a consultant or an IT team within an organization. So the first thing I want to talk about within usage and adoption is enhanced reporting. And what this will do is build on what Link monitoring reports provide out of the box. So those monitoring reports are good. They're good for diagnostics and detecting call quality issues, but there are better ways of providing some really nice reports and stats than what the out-of-the-box solution can provide. And this will allow you to provide comprehensive usage reports back to the business. So say, here's how many conferencing minutes we're doing, and you can say, you know, we've been able to bring across from an AT&T or BT service back into Link dial-in conferencing, and we're seeing, here's the uptake we're seeing and the cost savings we're seeing from that. You can drill down into use cases, find out what's being used and what isn't. So one big thing we see is when we deploy Link out into an organization and it's been scoped as a voice replacement, users will use Link to make and receive calls, and they'll use it for IM. But a lot of the time, that what we see is users forget that Link can do things like desktop sharing and whiteboards and PowerPoint presentations and things like that. So you can go into these reports and find that, oh, like nobody's using desktop sharing, so let's send out some training on actually using desktop sharing. More value back into the business. So with enhanced reporting, you can measure UC usage and adoption to actually validate that ROI that I spoke about. So increasing user productivity, reducing travel costs, all those kind of things that UC is pitched at in terms of providing value to the business. You can get things like service utilization statistics, so how hammered my front-end servers are and mediation servers, how utilized a SIP trunk is. So you can then feed that back in an operational capacity to teams that manage a solution. And you can detect and eliminate problems before end users notice. So the last thing you want to do is be in a reactive, well, not last thing, but a bad place to be is being in a reactive situation where users are calling up and saying, I'm having bad call quality problems. And you're then on the back foot where you have to investigate them and find out, was it the network, was it the device, all this kind of thing. Things that are going to get covered in other sessions during the week that you'll learn more about. What enhanced reporting can do is keep track of things like that, run synthetic transactions, and then alert you and report on it proactively so that you're on the front foot and you can solve those problems before they impact users. Another big thing that enhanced reporting can do is billing. And this allows you to define call rates and tariffs and then bill based on user or department. So you might want to say that users in here in Las Vegas, when they call to New York, they're charged this rate. When they call international, they're charged another rate. So this allows you to do bill back to teams and do that sort of good billing stuff. And we're seeing this more and more in tender requirements and custom requirements where they're saying, yes, we need to be able to do this. So there's a few solutions out in the market, and the guys are on the partner expo floor that can do this for you today. Also, live dashboards based on site, devices that are used, modalities. So one thing that I've seen is that you can pull up a whole world map and scope out all your Link sites, and it'll provide you call quality info, number of users per site, devices that are being used, so you can get a really good single pane of glass of a Link environment. And in terms of providing this functionality from an infrastructure perspective, you'll see agents deployed onto a Link front-end and back-end servers that'll give you both the real-time data and allow you to interrogate the quality of experience and call detail recording databases to then bring that up into a nicer report. And in terms of using these solutions, you can deploy them on-premise or use a hosted solution. So there's a lot of flexibility there. Just depends on how comfortable you or the customer are with their data traversing, you know, up in the cloud over SSL, if you want to keep that on-prem. So there's some flexibility there. Okay. The next one, similar to that, is end-user adoption. So we can report on how leveraged our Link user environment is, but what else can we do to ensure users are using things in the first place? Because the best technical solution is useless if it's not used. So if I deploy Link out into the environment, but then I run reports and I see, oh, nobody's actually using this, then I go back to the business and say, well, all this money we spent deploying this project, no one's even using it, and then you probably get marched out the door, I would say. Not being in a very nice position. So this allows you to do things like training. So delivering Link training within Link so that it's a bit sort of Link inception, but ensuring that the end users are actually adopting Link. Things like user satisfaction surveys as well. So if you provide a training in a traditional manner, whether that's classroom-based or floor walking or something like that, being able to deploy user satisfaction survey using Link and the client window extension allows you to then get some feedback from users so they can say, oh, you know, my call quality has been good, or I need some help with this, or this would be better. So creating that feedback loop with the users is really important. And then looking at things like Link Service Desk, where you can do things like IM service tests through Link and say a user can have a contact in their contact list where they can send an IM to that and that gets routed to a response group. And then your service desk can then become sort of multimodal. So rather than just receiving calls with voice, they can also respond to questions via IM as well. Okay, next one is app integration development. And this is really extending and leveraging the Link platform to use UCMA and UCWA to build those communications-enabled business processes into Link. And all the good stuff, which is really, you know, like the sky's the limit in this kind of thing, where, you know, you can take your the one application that your business uses as their line of business app day to day and build presence into that and make it really easy for users to escalate, you know, through to conferences and video calls and things. So the big one here in terms of the first approach is CRM and ERP integration. So if you've got something like Microsoft Dynamics CRM, you can integrate with this to provide caller information from CRM in Link. So this is like a screen pop where, say, when you receive a call from a Link user, rather than just displaying the E164 number, interrogate CRM and display that caller's information based on the information that's in CRM so that I can answer the call effectively and say, if I work at a school and somebody calls in and it's a student's parents, I know that it's their parents and I can answer accordingly. And you can also look at syncing the call data into CRM as well. So if I'm interacting with that student's parent, I then want to record the fact that I had a call with them back into CRM as well, so I've got record of that. And there's also Salesforce integration, which came out a couple of months ago. So you can have a Link integration and you get a Link window within the Salesforce portal. And then education, things like education database integration, which touches a little bit on the first scenario that I outlined there. So you can track attendance, you know, so when kids come in, like they get recorded against the database. So there's a lot of scope here and flexibility where you can take those line of business apps that, you know, have all this sways and sways of data into it and then build like communication processes on top of them. Okay. Developing on the platform. Effectively, there's two ways of doing this. There's server-side customization with UCMA, MSPL, and UCWA, and client-side customization with UI suppression mode and client window extension. And I'm going to go into some detail on these right now. So UCMA stands for Unified Communications Managed API, and version 4 is where it's at with Link Server 2013. And this is for things like bots and services from an infrastructure perspective that need to intercept Link traffic. So if you've got something that on the back end needs to look for particular Link traffic and then sit in a conference or fire off to look at an exchange mailbox and things like that, this is where UCMA will be used. And that app or bot that you write to leverage UCMA will sit on an application server within the Link topology. And then there's MSPL, which is Microsoft SIP Processing Language, and allows you to develop lightweight scripts that will sit within the SIP stack and look for particular SIP headers. So this is how a lot of the products I mentioned earlier in the session around ethical walls and keyword filtering, they actually use these MSPL scripts to look for those kind of things. What they can do is add a bit of an overhead to your Link front-end servers as well. So you have a script that's sitting and always running and always looking at all your SIP traffic. It can add a bit of a resource overhead, so that's a bit of a consideration. And so it filters on and can modify those SIP headers. And you'll see a lot of these out in the community where people have written an MSPL script to allow you to block federation to particular domains on particular edge servers and things like that. So there's a lot of flexibility with MSPL. UCWA is new in Link Server 2013 CU1. And the mobile client that you all have in your pockets is powered by UCWA. And this is great for custom web clients. So if you want to do things like web chat, you'd build that on top of UCWA. And then in terms of client-side apps, You can run Link within UI suppression mode, where you can do things like kiosk type functionality. So Link is still running on that client, but you've written a UI that is like a wrapper on top of Link. And the next one is the client window extension. So what you can do is have Link fire out a Silverlight extension next to an IM window, and you can interact with a bot in that way, and it can fire Silverlight content, things like timesheeting or that training content that I spoke about before, can all be interacted in Silverlight, and that's then interacting with the session you're having, so it's aware of presence and the modalities that you've got going on within that session. But there's other sessions this week around dev as well. There's going to be a lot more detail than what I'm covering here, and really go through the use cases and business benefits in more detail. Cool. So after that, an hour and 10 minutes of a quick whip around what you can do to enhance your voice rollout, these are the key takeaways that I think you should walk away with. So really evaluate solutions and keep the user experience in mind. There's nothing more important than the user experience in a Link rollout. Understand all the compliance requirements that must be met. Interact with the business and say, what do we need to do in terms of security to ensure that data protection is maintained? What do we need to do in terms of regulatory requirements? So SOX, HIPAA, all those kind of good ones, so that we can still use Link and it's not going to be restricted in pockets of the environment. And then complete the last mile with value adds. So enhanced reporting and user adoption and training. Leverage the Link platform that you've got to provide more intelligence back to the business and a better experience to users. So with that, has anybody got any questions? I would say that ZCOM is a good one. Aspect, Interactive Intelligence, Clarity Connect are all really good ones. They all differ, but those are a good one, a couple of good ones to check out. Yeah, so have a look at a company called Verba that we're here this week, and Actience Vantage is another good one for call recording. Cool. Any more questions? I had to do something for a fire brigade once that's similar to that where when an alarm was rung, it then made calls out to people that were in the fire station to alert them. And if I remember correctly, that was a really tough one to achieve. Come and see me after and we can discuss it more. I can maybe grab your email and we can discuss, yeah. So there's ways of doing it. Yeah, there's always bespoke stuff that it's possible, but you really have to sort of, you know, spend some brain cycles working out what it gets to do to get to work. Cool. Yep. Yeah, so Jamie Stark is doing a voice interoperability session at, I don't know when, unfortunately, yeah. But if you have a look in the guide, there's definitely details around that. Yeah. Any other questions? Yep.
You were saying that you, in Link 2013, you could reuse your old phones.
Yep. How? You can provision an analog device within Link 2013 and assign that a phone number, and then that interacts through your gateway or SBC where the analog phone would be physically connected into. So it's, there's technet documentation around that thing. Yep. Yeah. Yep, question? Sorry, the first part of the question, I missed it.
What can we do when transfer, when I have a RDS
RGS. Yep. Okay. Yeah. It's a known problem, yeah. It's got to do with earlier media setup, and it particularly affects link phone edition endpoints. You won't see it at all or if as much with the link desktop client. It's because the link phone edition endpoint doesn't have enough resources and processing power to get through that early media. So you hear that boop, boop, boop sound on the, yeah. It's a known problem, and there's no solution today, unfortunately. The only way around it is to not use link phone edition. If you look at a Polycom VVX or a SNOM phone or one of those, that problem doesn't affect those endpoints. Yeah, so your Polycom CX600s, CX500s, those type of ones. Yeah. Another question? Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, there's some interesting stuff you can do. Yeah, specifically if you run the Link 2013 mobile client on an Android phone, you can get those Android docking stations and things. Some of the other MVPs have looked at solutions like that, and not sure how usable they are. I'm not sure if I'd give them to a user. Maybe just to play around with as a tech person, maybe. But yeah. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I hadn't seen that one. That sounds interesting, though. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Great. So I'm just going to check out these related sessions on platform around compliance and recording, contact center and attendant console applications, the link dev session that I was talking about there and what's possible, and then a second part around contact center and attendant console applications on Thursday there. So these are ones I recommend checking out if you want to learn more about call recording, compliance, things like that throughout the week. So with that, I'll say thanks for coming to my session, and I hope you guys have the rest of a great day.